Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
Hi, this is Joe Campanelli, the host of In the Drink. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good evening and welcome to
Foment About It
on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're your co-hosts on this weekly journey of all things fermentable.
Archived on Stitcher, iTunes, and right here at HeritageRadioNetwork.org. Hi, everybody. We're really excited about today. We actually have some guests that have been here before, or a guest that has been here before. Let's dive into the show. So that guest I'm talking about is Chris Prout, who is the brewer at Dirk the Norseman and Greenpoint Beer and Ales.
Howdy.
And we have Eric Olson, another brewer at Greenpoint Beer and Ales. And I've known you for a very long time. Mm-hmm. I met you through working New York City Craft Beer Week, and you were a longtime manager of Briary Lane. And are you still working at Briary Lane?
I am. I'm actually still managing Briary Lane.
So you're pulling double duty.
Exactly.
Hardcore. What is Briary Lane?
It is a small craft beer shop in Greenpoint, Brooklyn. I like to think of us as sort of a tasting room and beer store. We do small pours, large pours. We do growlers. We do bottles to go.
How long has it been open?
We're about 5 years old, a little bit longer than five. But
have you been with it since the very beginning?
Yeah, since day one. Yeah, that's right. Stocked the shelves on day one, yeah.
But the history of it, it's run by Ed Raven, right? Mm-hmm. And he has an import company as well?
Yeah, Raven Import Company. He brings in Gaffel Kolsch, Jever Pilsner, a few beers from a brewery called Riegele in Augsburg, Germany. He brings those in also. And a new cider called Sundog from upstate.
So. Oh, wow. That's pretty exciting. He's been a longtime staple in New York for beer and craft beer and pushing the good fight.
Exactly. He started Brooklyn Brewery. He was the first sales rep there.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, I love what he's doing, and I love that he did that. And Briary Lane is by far one of my favorite beer shops. And as a matter of fact, I had some there last night. Perhaps a bit too many. But then the chapter continues, or like there are new chapters. Ed's doing more stuff, and then opened up Greenpoint Beer and Ales and Dirk the Norseman. What is that about? How long has this been in the running? And were you part of it in the beginning, right?
Well, I mean, sure. I guess Chris and I were both there through the planning stages. You know, he jumped on the brewing position early on, and I really wanted in, you know, as it came to fruition. So I threw my hat in the ring and hoped that I could, you know, join Chris and do some brewing as well.
That's fantastic. And Chris, you are part of the Brooklyn Bruisers, which meets at Briary Lane.
That's
the first Monday of every month.
Right.
And I met you through this, or through the homebrewing scene.
Sure.
Yeah. And you just befriended Ed Raven.
Yeah, I started working at the beer store early on as well. And I think Dirk the Norseman and Greenpoint Beer and Ale sort of came about with Ed and along with myself and Eric and a couple other guys just sort of throwing around ideas about what we could do next. And, you know, Ed would take us upstate to his house and generally generously host us at a concert series up there every year, Mountain Jam, and we'd all get together and do team building exercises and basically throw ideas around. And this came up one year, brewery along with a brew pub. We looked for spaces for quite a while, and then we landed on a spot at North 15th Street in Greenpoint, at the corner of Franklin. It's about a 6,000 square foot old plastic bag manufacturing factory, and converted it all into what is now a 240-odd seat brew pub with a full kitchen.
Full kitchen. Smoked stuff.
Fantastic. Beers made on premise. We have 16 lines there. Seven of them are of Ed's import stuff, the Gaffel Jever and Riegele, and now the Sundog Cider. and we have 9 lines dedicated to what we make there.
That's awesome.
Yep.
Had you commercially brewed before this venture?
I hadn't. Yeah, I started as a home brewer, mm-hmm. and I did a short internship or apprenticeship at the Outer Banks Brewing Station in North Carolina.
How big is the Outer Banks?
They have a 20-hectoliter system or 18-barrel system there. It is a brew pub as well. Yeah.
That's really fun. What kind of stuff did they make at Outer Banks? Is it kind of run? Because their brew pub is a pretty wide style?
They do. They change it up. But their flagships are lemongrass wheat, which is they're known pretty well for. Kolsch-style beer called an Olsch. But they brew all kinds of beers there that are really delicious.
How long have you been homebrewing?
I would say probably 4 years. And Eric was there. He helped me with my first batch of beer. It was an extract batch. And I got to know Eric at the beer store as well. We worked together. It's really a great spot because, you know, a lot of beer geeks would come in there. And it's really – Eric sort of set it up to be a spot that a lot you could come in there and talk about beer and learn a lot about beer and really appreciate beer for what it is. And I was a part of that. And that's, you know, Ed set that up. Eric built that. I'm part of that process. And that's how I really learned a lot about making beer. And
it was right there. Do you still homebrew, Eric?
Not right now. You know, I did for a lot of years. I grew up with a dad who started brewing when Carter made it legal. So I always had, you know, smell of mash in the house and grew up around craft beer. And I homebrewed for a while. I lost all my equipment when I moved to New York City. So I hadn't brewed in a few years, but...
Where are you from?
Albany area. Albany. So, yep. So since I moved down here, I haven't brewed too much, but I'm still into it and I love brewing with Chris now. It's great.
Yeah, and you guys aren't making, I mean, it's not a giant system. It's an awesome system that you pretty much sourced and found and built,
right,
Chris?
Yeah, we started.
What was that process like for you?
Well, you know, it's a lot of work to figure out what, first of all, you have to have the space. You have to know what can go in the space you have. And once you have a space, you start laying out the floor plan. I was pushing for as big a system as we could put in there because, you know, when you make beer, you know it's a lot of work, and you want to make the most beer you can at one time. But we settled on a 5-barrel system, which is small, but it affords us the flexibility to experiment quite a bit.
Right.
You know, we don't have the ingredient costs. We're trying a lot of different things. I mean, between Eric and myself, there's a lot of ideas that flow freely. And along with, you know, the Homebrew Club and you guys, the community of New York brewing is really sort of active and growing and inspiration. You know, it's been an inspiration for me for sure.
So right now you have 9 beers, 9 lines at Dirk the Norseman, right?
Right.
And then you also have 2 beers on at Browery Lane that are not on at Dirk the Norseman.
That's correct.
So right now you have 11 different beers out there from your 5-barrel system, which is... pretty darn impressive. Yeah. The other thing I think that was impressive, I mean, when was that opening? It was like 3 months ago?
It was in March. Middle of March. Yeah.
So Chris and I went to the opening, and I really hadn't talked to you very much about what you were brewing.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing from day one that I was very impressed with is that you have a lot of variety. So you had everything from a very low ABV mild, you had a smoked Helles, you had several different wonderful pale ales and IPAs,
right.
I believe a porter.
Sure.
So pretty, you know, nice variety. And now... you have 9 lines on, plus these 2 at, you know, that we had, that Chris and I had last night at, so you're doing a sour,
we've done a kettle sour, yeah. What we've done is we sort of set up our fermentation schedule around our yeast.
Mm-hmm.
So we have 6 tanks, we're using 6 kinds of yeast, and we run about 4 generations of those yeast. So sometimes, I mean, the first generation, we typically start with a lighter beer. And then we move it up to stronger beers. But we don't brew the same beer, typically, within that strain. So what you'll see is, you know, we start, say, like an Abbey strain out with a variation on a Grisette, and then we'll move to, a Saison, or, you know, keep that strain going up, you know, up to a triple is where we finally, well, a quadruple, actually, is where we ended up with that that Abbey strain, so... we move them along. We do experiment quite a bit. Yeah, we've got barrels. We've we're trying a lot of different things, and really love what we're doing there. It's exciting.
Ed basically gave you guys complete creative control over the beers, right?
He does. Yeah, it's nice. He sees the numbers though, and if he says, you know, and that's what the flagship beers, they pay the bills, you know, and that affords us to experiment more.
Sure.
So what are your flagship beers? Since
we don't have
that.
Any yet. But I think that's what you see with a lot of breweries. You know, they have their beers that they make quite a bit and they're popular. And that's what keeps the brewers going. You know, that's what keeps the excitement going, because you can knock out your flagship beers and feel good about them and feel good about where they are. And then those can afford you to brew other beers that you want to try out. And that's where you see your seasonals or your experimental beers.
Cool.
What have been some challenges jumping from, you were brewing 5 gallons at a time, right? You went from 5 gallons to 5 barrels.
I started out with 5 gallons, moved to a kegel, which is 10 gallons, and then to the 5 barrel system. The hardest part, I would say, it's just the equipment, just learning and understanding all the equipment and laying out the brewery. And you know, it's a lot of different, I wouldn't say engineering, but it's sort of just how all the pieces fit together and learning what those pieces are. Because, you know, the process is pretty much the same, but it's just a matter of scaling up. I mean, it's as far as ingredients go, I would say we've gotten, you know, we Whirlpool now. I didn't do that at home, so our hopulization is a little bit higher on the bitterness. So we moved a lot of our additions later in the process.
Right. But,
yeah.
I love it. And how about cider? Are you still doing cider? Are you excited for cider season coming in?
missed out on cider last year. I am excited about it. I do want to work more with apples. I think that you know, New York is the apple state, and I think there's a lot of opportunity to bridge the gap between cider and beer, even.
Yeah. Have you ever done that? Have you ever made a graph?
I haven't.
Got
no.
any in the future?
No. I know you have.
One. And it's not my only one. I mean, I hope to do it again. You know, it's definitely a lot of fun. And about 20% apple juice from Massachusetts I used in this beer, kind of going for like an apple pie kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It was on a bready pale ale base.
Yeah,
with the apple, and then dry hop with a little bit of cinnamon sticks. And it ended up working really well.
Nice.
Although I wish I used some molasses in there to kind of round it out, because it ended up really dry. Mm-hmm. It's nice and mature. Still have a couple cakes left. But enough about me.
So I'm curious to know. So every time that I've walked by Dirk, even if I've been going somewhere else and have not been able to stop in, you guys are packed.
Yeah.
I mean, you're doing a lot of business.
Well, we are. We opened up in March. I think during the week you see it's a little bit slower, but we're starting. I mean, we haven't done a lot of advertising. We don't have a presence on the web yet, so it's all word of mouth right now. I think you know, we sell about half the beers we make in house right now. I expect it to pick up a little bit in the summer, but you know, we're stepping into this, and we're not jumping in. We're scaling up at a pace I think that we can probably handle. And, mm-hmm. It is crowded on the weekends, and that's probably what you're seeing. But yeah, it's I think people enjoy it there.
Yeah. I mean, everyone that we've known that has been there obviously has raved about it. What are you finding that people are drinking?
A lot of hoppy beers.
Okay,
yeah.
That's good.
That's mostly what we see.
So pale ales, your IPAs. I know you did one double IPA at least.
Right, IPA with Tupelo honey. Mm-hmm. To help dry it out and give a little bit of the Tupelo honey, I think, has a little bit of caramel and citrus flavor to it. Yeah, when we made mead with it. Yeah.
Well, with that, we're going to take a really quick break, and we'll be back in a moment on Ferment About It. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. I've devoted my idiot career to the old ways, the old recipes, the old tools, the old geography of where serious foods come from for centuries. And I've strived to make these wonderful things available to New Yorkers for 37 years. So it's a fait accompli for us to support Heritage Radio Network. And I hope you will too, and I hope you'll keep tuning in. For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome back to Foment About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. We're here in the studio with Eric Olson and Chris Prout of Greenpoint Beer and Ales and Dirk the Norseman in association with Browery Lane and Raven Imports. Did I get everything?
All of it.
Oh, we also...
Brooklyn Bruisers.
So just for all of you out there who don't live in Brooklyn, haven't been, so Dirk the Norseman is the name of the actual brew pub, so the restaurant slash brewery that you can go, and then your beers that you're gonna that you sell outside will be under the name Greenpoint Beer...
Ale work, right?
That's okay. Right. Yep. So just for clarification.
That's right. Yep.
So tell us, you guys just poured us a beer. We actually tasted this last night at Browery Lane. So this is one of those special beers that you're not pouring right now at the at Dirk, but is pouring at Browery Lane.
Yeah, this is only available at Browery Lane.
Now, did you make this with that in mind, just out of curiosity?
This beer is inspired by you guys. Yeah, this the first time I heard about a kettle sour was from Chris and Mary. And it was a technique that I hadn't really thought about. You know, Berliner Weisses typically take a long time with lactobacillus to do its thing and make a beer sour. This technique is not a sour mash, but a kettle sour. We used 9 pounds of grain in the kettle with wort that was boiled, but then cooled to 120. We dropped the pH to 4.5 before we put the grain in, just so lactobacillus would have a better chance than the other bugs that were on the grain. And we waited about, well, we took pH readings throughout the process. We saw the temperature drop to about 100 degrees, maybe 95 degrees over 48 hours.
So you started at 120, let it drop, because there's no heat element to keep.
There is. We gas fire our kettle.
Okay.
But we didn't want to interfere in the process. Right. We thought if we started high, I think, you know, depending on your process, I think there's a lot of people that start around 100 degrees, 110. We started at the high end of the range and just let it go and let it come down.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask how you dropped your pH?
With this one? We thought about different ways. So, you know, there's phosphoric acid, there's lactic acid, and citric acid. There's other acids as well, but those are the three that I considered. We used citric acid with this one because we thought it would match the lemongrass and the sriracha well in the beer.
Mm-hmm. And then after this, so how you guys left it at 48 hours?
48 hours. I think the pH came down to about 3.2 or 3.3. And that's when we came in at the middle of the night. We were doing calculations, to, you know, throughout the day to see if the pH would follow a path. So we took readings throughout the day, and we determined that in order to catch the pH where we wanted it and boil, we would come in at 3 a.m. in the morning and start the brew day. So we did. We got up at 3 a.m., and we were down there at 3:30, and... came in, took a pH reading. It didn't drop as much as we thought. So we said, well, what the hell with it? You know, we'll go ahead and boil it anyway. It tastes good. We took a sample and tasted it, and it was definitely had a lactic sourness. And
how'd it smell?
It smelled a little bit corny.
Yeah.
Like cream corn.
Yeah.
A little bit yogurty too. Yeah. So we started to fire up the kettle, and sure enough, the burner didn't go.
Awesome.
So, long story short, you know, trying to figure out what's going on with the kettle, the burner, we drive down to, I guess...
Park Slope.
Park Slope area to a burner place. We thought we had the part that we needed after about 7-8 hours of troubleshooting the kettle. And we found the part, took it back to the brewery... put it on the burner, and it didn't work. Mm-hmm. So, knocking around with the burner more, and there's a ring inside that was touching the knockout on the
flame sensor. And that's what was causing. Yeah. So we just reset the ring and it fired right up.
But you got down to a lower pH as a
result. Meanwhile.
Yeah. Meanwhile, it kept going a little bit. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So it's within that 3.3 to 3.2 range before we boiled the second time.
And how long did you boil the second time?
You know, I think it was a regular boil. It was around 60 minutes.
Okay. So full.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you said you used lemongrass and sriracha yeast in this?
Fresh lemongrass and sriracha for a flame-out addition. Yep.
Now, this is a generally unusual... This is an unusual sour beer, and you get all... What kind of clientele do you get at Browery Lane, and how what's the response been on this beer?
We get, I guess, a huge mix of people. We get the die-hard beer geeks, but we also get just local regulars who are, you know, into... craft beer a little bit or just want to challenge themselves. So we put up both beers over the weekend, the IPA and the sour. Both were pretty popular. I think the IPA moved a little bit faster only because hops are the thing, right?
Words.
Now.
It's got those,
yeah.
those three.
Yeah, it doesn't
know,
matter.
IPA.
Yeah.
Say IPA. You call this an IPA, it'll move.
Mm-hmm. yeah, it's good for the weather. The sour, I think, has been moving because it's nice and refreshing.
Mm-hmm. What is the IPA?
The IPA is... a new one that Chris and I did, I guess. It's brewed with, it's pretty simple malt bill, Pilsner and wheat. So pretty light. It's about 7%. We used, it's called Island IPA, I guess, because we used hops from islands. We used some New Zealand. We used some, I guess, sriracha, which is sort of Japanese origin.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Motuka and Nelson? So we were really...
Wait, you used sriracha, Nelson, and...
Motuka.
I don't know how to.
I don't know how to.
All right, because when I did, anyway, when I got one last night, I said, "Oh, this has got to have sriracha ace in it."
We both thought there was,
but there wasn't listed on the board, so I'm glad to hear that.
Good call.
Yeah, yeah.
I was doubting my palate for a little bit, but
I thought somehow the Nelson and the Motueka was putting off. I was like, "Wow, the combination is sriracha."
But back to the island. Island hops.
Mm-hmm. This was the first beer I think we've done a hop stand with, so we did exclusively hop standing with these.
Tell people what that means.
Sure. So we did our regular boil. I think it was 90 minutes. We didn't add any hops. Rather than whirlpool, add hops in the whirlpool, what we did is we pulled the wort out, brought it through the chiller, back through the whirlpool arm, spun it till we brought it down to about 180, so lower than boil. Then we dumped in all of our hops, sort of bypassed the chiller, whirlpooled as normal, and then rested and brought it back through the chiller into the fermenter. So basically everything went in post-boil.
So it's kind of like an extreme hop bursting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Technique. Had you guys done that before?
No. No, Eric brought that technique up to me. He said, because we were getting more bitterness in our beers because we were figuring our system out. And Eric said, why don't we do a hop stand? I said, let's try.
It's man, and you great. Get a there's a lot ton of hop aroma and flavor in that beer. So
how do you calculate the amount of hops to use when you're hop bursting
or hop standing?
I think we just took what we thought would go in the regular boil and then just added it all at the end.
So you did the same amount. You didn't compensate for the fact that there was
like maybe a little bit more.
Right. Okay.
are you using pellets for this technique?
This is all pellets.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's delicious.
A lot of dry hopping as well.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Makes sense. And it's an amazingly light beer. I mean, it's wheat and Pilsner, but it's 7%, and it's a sneaky 7%.
Mm-hmm. And you guys used, really what type of yeast did you use for that?
This was a Kolsch yeast.
A Kolsch yeast. Okay.
Yep. Uh-huh. Fermented a little bit cooler, nice and fruity, soft finish. Yep, with the Kolsch yeast.
You said you were using 6 different strains over there right now?
We are, and we rotate them.
And what are so?
So we do have a Kolsch yeast going. We have a wit yeast, we have a Cal Ale, we've got a American wheat yeast right now, a Saison yeast, and
Ardennes,
another Belgian strain. Yeah. Yep. And we rotate, and once that four generation cycle expires on that beer, maybe we'll go a fifth. We're thinking about doing a fifth on one, but we'll go with another strain.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not typically brewing beers like, you know, the IPA is with the Kolsch yeast. So we're not typically necessarily, you know, brewing beers that are specific for that strain.
Right.
Yeah.
You mentioned that you got a lot of barrels. What kind of barrels and what are you putting into them and taking out of them?
Well, we're shooting for a fairly neutral barrel. We got them from a Long Island winery. And there's a lot of vineyards up Long Island. I think if you called around, you could probably find some barrels there. But they're red wine barrels. And what we do, we have a quad in one, which will probably be our holiday beer. And we've got an old ale, like an English style, one with Brett C., the Glicini strain, and then one without. And we have four barrels with multi-grain Saison, and that's with all of the Valley malt product, the maltster up in Massachusetts.
Hadley.
Hadley, yeah. And that's with buckwheat, spelt, rye, wheat, barley, and oats. And those we're experimenting with the Botanomyces as well. We have the Lambicus, the Brussellensis, and the Trois as well, as along with a barrel that doesn't have any of it in it.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. So what else do you guys have coming up? What do you bring for the summer?
You know, we're doing something for the event with the...
Yes, for the swine...
The summer solstice,
summer
swine?
Session swine festival. Right. We haven't really named this festival, and tickets are sold out. I'd love to invite everybody to it, but
yeah.
Although there's a small possibility that...
We might open it up for another 25 to 50 tickets.
Okay.
Based on the space, which we're excited about. But that's June 21st at the Arrogant Swine, which is a place being opened up by Tyson Ho, who's a pretty... kick-ass
what are you guys
barbecue
making
guy.
For that?
Well, I actually did a collaboration with Five. Well, with I am 5 8 with Big Alice, and we made a smoked mild kind of beer, like be about 3.6%.
Okay.
And then I'm gonna do a smash ale too, just a straight up all hop bursted beer with Golden Promise, and I haven't decided on my hop yet. So. Mm-hmm.
And on the homebrew side, I'm gonna make a blackberry cider.
Nice.
And I think I'm gonna make a short mead, but I don't know what kind yet.
All right.
Yeah. Maybe you make a short mead.
What are you making for?
We're thinking we have a cream ale that was kettle soured.
So oh, yeah.
So nice.
Sour cream ale along with, we did do a Grazer this past week that we might have. It could be ready for it.
Say what a Grazer is.
Yeah.
It's 100% oak smoked wheat malt. Yeah. And not a lot of, from what Eric and I have sort of researched, it does have significant hopping, but I think the Eric found something that said that the hops were aged, so it might not be as aggressively hopped as
you guys
one would.
And there are different hop because we've talked about this before with people. There are different hop varieties, and I don't think we get some of those hop
some
varieties,
of the Polish
right?
varieties.
Yeah,
sure.
So it's interesting.
Right.
And the yeast, I think, is no longer available. Yeah. So whatever was used,
yet
there was some theory that
right.
Grazer. Had some tartness, and it's a disputed sort of fact whether or not it's true. But another theory was that the yeast, the classic Grazer yeast, had some sort of slight acidity or mm-hmm. tannins or tartness that provided that. So,
speaking of that, I just have to mention that this just reminds me that in the New York Times today, there's an article on the sequencing of brewer's yeast DNA. So, there are actually white labs, and then there's another lab in Belgium that are sequencing all these different varieties of brewer's yeast, and they're going to work on, you know, possibly, instead of genetically modifying the yeast, they're basically, this could help in increase breeding of, you know, in creation of new strains of yeast through breeding, natural breeding, instead of genetic modification. But if you haven't read it, go out there. It's New York Times today. It's really interesting. Mm-hmm. But I think that would be a way maybe to bring back some of these strains or develop strains that, you know, fit kind of the flavor profile and aroma profile that you're looking for in something like a Grazer. So anyway.
You see a lot of you saying like, hey, we're related.
Yeah.
Hey, dude, you're my cousin.
And where is that Grazer going to be? Will that be on at Dirk this summer?
It probably will.
Okay.
Yeah,
also,
along with at the
for us to legally make a Grazer, we have to sprinkle some barley into it. Apparently, so maybe it should be 99.9%.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is 99.
I think that's what you meant.
It is.
No, this happened to our friend Paul Dugolinski. I can never pronounce his name from
that
Blind
was
Bat, but he called the TTB or he got the kibosh from. From the TTB when he would submit his recipe formation on it, like you're supposed to have some barley in there, and he was on the phone with him. He's like, "Well, okay, but how much?" And they're like, "Some." So he sprinkles.
We definitely put some in there.
Yep. Pretty good. But that's our show, man. You guys are awesome. Thank you so much for coming. Check out Dirk the Northman, Green Pond Bear Nails, Browery Lane, and Raven Imports. Shout out to Ed Raven.
And I got to say that it's an easy walk between Dirk the Norseman and Browery Lane, and there's several other destinations around. So Greenpoint, that little area of Greenpoint is, you could, well, we did a craft beer crawl last night. And
I'm still feeling the effects of that.
So yeah, it's a great, I mean, super good craft beer destination now. So if you're in New York City, you want to drink some good craft beer, you know where to go, Greenpoint.
Brooklyn. Thanks, Chris Prout, Eric Olson.
Yeah.
Goes the bomb.
The men about it.
The men about it.
Ooh.
The men
about
it. Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
So you got yourself a hurricane running through your brain, driving you crazy, off on a campaign.